From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Alyssa Block. What a week. After a month of heated town hall debates that put Democrats on their heels, President Obama tried to retake control of the health care debate. His speech on Wednesday to a joint session of Congress scored him points with some pundits, but so did President Clinton's health care address back in 1993. And we know how that turned out. To help us understand where the healthcare debate goes from here, I'm joined by our regular political commentators, E.J. Dion of The Washington Post and Brookings Institution, and David Brooks of The New York Times. Hi, guys.
Good to be here.
To be with you.
Part of what the president had to say late in his speech on Wednesday was this. He was talking about the debate having to do with the character of our country, and he was speaking to critics who argue that the healthcare plan would put too much power in the government's hands. Let's listen to some of what he said.
You see, our predecessors understood that government could not and should not solve every problem. They understood that there are instances when the gains in security from government action are not worth the added constraints on our freedom. But they also understood that the danger of too much government is matched by the perils of too little.
And E.J., he went on to say that markets can crash without the leavening hand of wise policy. Monopolies can stifle competition and the vulnerable can be exploited. Do you think what the president had to say changed any minds there in Congress?
Well, I think it may have been the beginning of an argument to the public, to the American people, about their broader sense of politics. You had gone through a couple of months where much of the sloganeering on the right was the same old anti-government stuff. And finally, you heard President Obama, in what I thought was both emotionally and intellectually the most powerful part of the speech, say, wait a minute, we have a different view of government. I have a different view of government. It's necessary. We've used it successfully in the past. This other view is simply wrong. And it was a kind of aggressive but quietly aggressive argument that said, we have a different take on how you improve the lives of Americans.
And David Brooks, President Obama there making a direct reference to Senator Kennedy, the late Senator Kennedy, who had fought very hard for this and had a vision of government as being this advocate for the poor and the downtrodden.
Right, though that's not where Obama wanted to come out. This part of the speech was, I was told, the most important emotionally for him, the part he really cared about because it was his broader vision. And, you know, he had come at a point where health care has followed the AIG takeover. It's followed the auto industry. A great deal of concern that the government was taking over everything. And I think what he wanted to show was on health care and on other issues, he's not a libertarian anti-government person, but he's not a big government orthodox liberal. Being Obama, he always wants to put left and right on one side and then find the pragmatic sweet spot in the middle. That's how he conceives himself, and that was what he was trying to express there on health care and more broadly.
The president also offered a promise to use what, David, in your column today in The New York Times, you call the dime standard. Let's listen.
I will not sign it if it adds one dime to the deficit, now or in the future, period. And to prove that I'm serious, there will be a provision in this plan that requires us to come forward with more spending cuts if the savings we promised don't materialize.
And David, you say that if you put that dime standard into effect, that means that the health bill in the House right now should be considered dead.
Yes, the health bill in the House would create about $220 billion deficits over 10 years and another additional trillion over the next 10 years.
Apart from savings that he's talking
about? On top
about?
Of everything, this is at the end of everything. And so what I thought the essential substance of the speech, which this sentence encapsulated, was a lot of chum, a lot of red meat thrown out to liberals, but on every substantive issue, basically moving a little toward the center, establishing ground with the independents. And the independents in Congress, the moderates and the blue dog Democrats, were exceedingly happy with the substance of the speech. The Liberal Democrats had a meeting Thursday morning in which they told themselves the president was on their side. By Thursday afternoon, I think they had come to realize that substantively, he's moved to the center to try to win over those moderates.
Well, E.J., where does that leave the liberals in Congress?
Well, first of all, I think he had to solve two problems simultaneously, and they were hard to solve. He did need to appeal to the middle ground, not only in Congress, but also in the country. He wants to bump the numbers for this effort up from where they have been. But he also needed to give heart to the liberals who had been sort of disappointed that he really hasn't spent much time with them because he took them for granted. And so there was a lot of language here, the language about government, the language in favor of the public plan, though quickly saying that's negotiable. And I think what he did is he united sort of middle of the road Democrats with the liberals in saying, wait a minute, we got another enemy out here. The enemy are those who want to kill this bill, the enemy of the Republicans who are distorting what we're up to. And so I think he achieved his political end. The fact is, he is for a moderate bill. The biggest problem, I think, for liberals is not really about the public plan. It's the lid on spending at $900 billion. And I think the $90 billion a year, where I think they're going to have problems with covering people kind of in the middle of the middle class at that rate. The subsidies may not be big enough for those folks if they put in a mandate, which is going to be part of the proposal.
Just a moment here to talk about the Republican congressman from South Carolina, Joe Wilson, who shouted out, "You lie," at one point during the president's speech. Congressional Democrats say they may admonish him next week if he doesn't go on the House floor to apologize. What do you make of this, E.J. Dionne? Where do you think this ends up?
Democrats were very pleased that a Republican tried to turn a presidential speech into a town meeting. It looked extreme. The Republican leadership clearly thought this was bad for them because they leaned on him to apologize, and he grudgingly apologized. And then Obama could come out graciously and say, "Oh, I accept his apology." I think Democrats want to keep this story going for a bit.
And he's actually using it as a fundraiser. So is his Democratic opponent in South Carolina, David
Brooks.
It's
crazy for the Republicans. They should frog march him out to the floor and make him apologize. Huh. A lot of people who don't know about employer-provided tax employee health benefits know about Joe Wilson now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's overshadowed all the wonkery, and it's just a disaster for the Republican Party.
Do you think that there are Republican votes beyond maybe one, Olympia Snowe of Maine, that will sign on ultimately to a bill? E.J. Dionne?
I think that Olympia Snowe may be it, though it's possible that her colleague from Maine, Susan Collins, might be reluctant, at least in terms of public opinion in Maine, to break with her. But Snowe is probably it. I was told by a Democrat trying to find Republicans in the House that he couldn't get more than three who might even be possible, and that sounds about right.
And very briefly, David Brooks, anybody else that's not being counted in there?
Listen, there's no bill now that is close to being deficit neutral, no bill within hundreds of billions of dollars. If they make the changes to make it deficit neutral, you could pick off a bunch in the or a couple in the Senate, but that will take some big legislative changes.
E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post, David Brooks of The New York Times, thanks very much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
You too.
And one more note on health care. Again, we're hoping to answer some of your questions about the push to overhaul the U.S. health care system. It's confusing, we know, so we'll get answers to some of your questions. You can send them to us by going to npr.org and clicking on Contact Us. And please put the word health in the subject line.